Hello, listeners. Today is Wednesday, July 6th. Welcome to Behind the Numbers, Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Sky. This is the show where we talk about how retail collides with every part of our lives. I'm your host, Sarah Lebo. On this episode, we'll be discussing inflation, economic uncertainty, and retailer reactions. Joining me today is Senior Analyst for the Retail and E-Commerce Briefing, Zach Stambor. Hey, Zach.
Hey, Sarah.
And also here with us is Director of Marketing and Commerce Briefings, Jeremy Goldman. Welcome, Jeremy.
Great to be with you, Sarah.
Great to have you. All right, we're starting as always with our first segment, News and Reviews, where I give the news and our guests tell me their reviews. So today's headline comes to us from CNN Business, and it's, "Just keep your returns. Stores weigh paying you not to bring back unwanted items." Zach, your review of stores paying you not to bring back unwanted items in 60 seconds is?
I think this is a great idea because on the consumer end, returns are really burdensome. Nobody wants to return stuff. It's annoying. And from the retailer end, they're really costly. On average, online returns cost about 21% of the average order value. Amazon's been doing this for quite a while, and it provides a really good customer experience. So I think it's a great idea.
Makes sense. I must admit, I'm not an item returner, so I sort of just deal with the items I have. Jeremy, your review of stores paying you not to bring back your unwanted items in 60 seconds is?
Well, it is a really great idea. And I think part of it is there's an evolution here in terms of how people should be thinking about returns. You know, bracketing has been high for a while. That's, people just essentially using their home as a fitting room. And, you know, you as a retailer, you have the ability to invest in AI and other solutions that allow you to figure out who are the bad actors. So basically, who's trying to take advantage of you and who isn't. And, you know, it doesn't make sense really to bear the cost of returns to the extent that these retailers do. So it's definitely a space that, you know, is worth paying close attention to.
Yeah. I mean, if I were a retailer, I would definitely be concerned about consumers buying a bunch of items saying, I didn't like these items and then keeping them. But assuming there are measures in place to prevent that could be a good idea. All right. Thank you both for your news and reviews. Now it's time for our next segment. Retail Me This, Retail Me That, where we discuss an interesting retail topic. Today, we're talking about rising retail prices and economic turbulence. Let's start off with the big picture. Inflation rose to a 40-year high of 8.6% in May, according to MarketWatch, and retail sales fell 0.3% in the same month. Every time I go to the grocery store right now, it feels like I'm spending more and more on the same stuff that I bought the week before. What is happening, and how'd we get here? Zach?
So this is basic economics 101, it's supply and demand. Early in the pandemic, people had nothing to do and they just started buying stuff. And so demand was incredibly high. And over the course of the past 2 years, people have continued to want to buy stuff. However, there have been a whole slew of disruptions ranging from shutdowns in China to drought and other weather-related disruptions to the war in Ukraine. And so the whole supply chain is disrupted. The transportation of those goods has been disrupted. And so everything is in a bit of turmoil, and that's causing costs to rise. And companies are passing those costs on to customers.
That makes sense. Jeremy, anything to add to that?
Yeah, no, I think a lot of what Zach said is spot on. I think the other thing that I would just add that's really interesting is the fact that we didn't necessarily have the right levels of resiliency because of a pandemic, because we're not used to having pandemics. They don't happen all that often. So, for instance, you know, Zach talked about the supply chain. And I think one issue there is that people didn't have redundancies in place. People didn't have the ability to manufacture in a secondary location that was not, you know, impacted by shutdowns, you know, for example. And that's the kind of thing, you know, a lot of experts do think that we will see other pandemics in our lifetime. Yay, I know, right? but the truth of the matter is that in a situation like that, we will be more prepared. We will have some of these redundancies in place by virtue of the fact of the muscle memory of certain things that we did go through over the last year or two.
Jeremy, you're speaking my language. I have a public health background. I don't know if I agree with you on the redundancies thing, though. Is that something we're seeing now? Are we seeing an increase in factories and warehouses and labor incentives?
I feel like, Zach, weren't we talking about this recently in one of our storyboarding meetings about how companies are trying to look at this? So I don't think that they're exactly where they ought to be, you know, but at the very least, like, this is something that is entered their consciousness.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I don't think there's that many companies. It takes a long time to make a shift like this. But if there's anything that gave companies reason to consider or begin making that shift, it's this past 2 years, particularly China with the shutdowns, because what companies have found is that a shutdown could happen at any time and you don't want to be caught with your factory unable to produce any goods.
That makes sense. Yeah. In addition to those supply chain issues, you also have just so much spending and changing in spending in the past couple years and couple months, right? Like all of this money being fueled into the economy, all this spend shifting to like restaurants and experiences. I feel like that's really changed the supply and demand.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. We're regressing to the mean of pre-pandemic spending, where over the past 2 years, people shifted a lot of their spending to goods and away from services. But now, since the start of this year, people are returning to restaurants, they're returning to other in-person experiences, and that's coming at the expense of goods.
Yeah, I want to talk about that, like differences in spend. Economic uncertainty, it means different things for different retailers. It even means different things within the same retailer for different product categories. So Amazon and Target, stores like that, are seeing sales deflate, especially for things like furniture and electronics, which takes us back to our sort of overstock conversation. But then off-price retailers and private labels within big box retailers, they could be reaping the benefits of inflation. Can you give me an overview of how this story differs across different types of retailers?
So with the supply chain disruptions, retailers began placing their orders for goods earlier than they normally would. And so they had to guess what people wanted. And guess what? They guessed wrong a lot of the time. And so Amazon and Target and Walmart and a whole slew of retailers have excess inventory because people have enough outdoor furniture. They have enough indoor furniture. They have enough high-priced items because they spent the past 2 years buying those up. And so that's bad news for Target, which has said that they're going to mark down a lot of this excess inventory. But it's actually really good news for off-price retailers like Nordstrom Rack and TJ Maxx, which had struggled earlier in the pandemic with just having enough inventory because the supply chain disruptions prevented retailers from having enough inventory that they would then move on to these off-price retailers.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that one thing that's really interesting is, you know, it's definitely true that there are certain types of things that people want to spend more on. And a lot of those things are intangible, you know, like travel, where, for instance, inflation and gas prices, what we've seen is people are still going to want to travel because they put it off for so long that even though they're worried about the economy, they're still going to do it now. And I think that that's one thing to keep in mind, that, you know, consumption patterns are changing. But then, you know, there are different types of consumers, obviously, in different socioeconomic backgrounds. And one thing that's really interesting to follow, I think, is luxury, for instance. You know, you see there are some people within like affordable luxury that are just going to move downscale a little bit or to private label, you know, like you were talking about before. And there are some retailers that are going to be more likely to benefit from things like that. Like that's something that Target and Walmart will benefit from, even though there's a lot that they won't benefit from here. But then on top of that, you do have some people in that luxury, you know, stratosphere where they need to protect their price point. You know, they're not going to discount and they're going to basically stay the same, you know, from a cost perspective, because that value, like the mystique of their products, is so important to them. And frankly, there are certain people who aren't, you know, as impacted by inflation, because if you're, you know, worth $10 million, you know, but then all of a sudden, you know, your stock portfolio goes down a bit, you know, you might still be able to afford that Cartier.
Sure, yeah.
I think it's such a good point that some people have not been that affected by inflation. So if you bought a home several years ago, you've seen your home value skyrocket. If you switched jobs in the past year or two, you likely got a significant raise. And so a lot of people are actually in a better position than they were a year, maybe 2 years ago, even with these difficult conditions.
That really moves me into the next thing I wanted to talk about. I guess the big question of the next thing I wanted to talk about is how bad are things really? I honestly don't know the answer. So I was looking at some stats from Cardalytics. Spend per purchase is increasing across retail categories. So in Q1 of this year, spend per purchase went up 7% for gas and grocery, 10% for restaurants, 2% for retail, and 20% for travel and entertainment year over year from 2021. The restaurants, the travel, entertainment, those are the only categories, though, where the number of actual purchases has increased. So all that's to say, consumer spend is telling a very different story in some of these areas than purchase volume is. And those metrics can be very different month over month than year over year, because of how unusual the past 2.5 years have been. What metrics should retailers be looking at to map out their next move?
All of them? It's hard to say. It really depends on what you're seeking to look at. So generally speaking, retail numbers are looked at on a month over month basis because that enables you to see a trend line. But when you look year over year, you see consumer spending is significantly up and consumers are still able to keep up with inflation, at least to some extent. So it really depends on what you're looking to see in terms of what metrics you want to look to.
And, you know, the only other thing I'd add to that is you've got to be thinking, do you have a long-term perspective or a short-term perspective? And there are some companies that are able to take a little bit more of a long-term perspective and not try to pass on as much of those, you know, inflated costs to their customer base. And they're hoping that they're going to have better customer loyalty and have a better customer experience as a result of that. So whether or not that is going to prove out to be true, at least they have a hypothesis around it, which means making a little bit less money in the short run and making a bit more in the long run.
Do you have any examples for that?
I think Walmart is probably actually a pretty good example. And again, that's why this is so interesting to cover, because there's narratively, like, there are a lot of pros and cons about individual retailers. But I mean, I would say that the ones such as Walmart that are really competing, and a lot of their value as an organization is tied up in providing value to their customers and not trying to push as much of that burden onto their customers during this time. That's something that might hurt them from a stock perspective, but in the long term, it doesn't make anybody stop shopping at your store and, you know, trading down to like a Dollar General and then never coming back in. So I think that that would be one example of that.
Gotcha. I would love to talk with you more after the break about other things Walmart is doing. We're going to talk more about what specific companies are doing after the break, but first, a quick word from our sponsor, Sky. Sky's omnichannel marketing platform connects your data and workflows across all walled garden media. Sky empowers leading brands and agencies with insights they can use, data they can trust, and impact they can measure on the media that matters most. Access data intelligence, make real-time campaign optimizations, manage all digital channels, and understand what's actually working in order to drive growth. Learn more or request a personalized demo at sky.io. That's SKAI.io. Welcome back from the break. Now it's time for pop-up rankings, where we take a look at specific examples and rank them. This week, I want to hear about two companies reacting well to economic uncertainty and two which may have some challenges ahead. Let's start off with our winners. Zach, who do you think is responding the best?
Well, just a few moments ago, Jeremy was talking about Walmart, and I think Walmart is doing a really great job of responding to perhaps the biggest challenge that people face with rising prices, and that's gas prices. Mm-hmm. So with Walmart Plus, its membership program, it doubled the fuel discount it offers members of the program, and they receive 5 to 10 cents off each gallon at both Walmart Run and Murphy USA stations. And so that's a great incentive to get people to sign up for this program that really only has like 15% of U.S. households at this point, which is a stark contrast to Amazon Prime, which has 60+%.
Gotcha. So Walmart is using gas prices to leverage getting more consumers into the Walmart ecosystem on the whole.
Yeah, that's right.
Sounds effective to me. I mean, I don't own a car, but I'm sure it's a huge incentive for the majority of Americans. Jeremy, who do you see as responding the best right now?
I thought an interesting example, you know, staying on cars and, you know, gasoline prices was Ford, you know, basically saying that they're going to be looking into cutting their EV ad spending to zero and working towards that, you know, for the simple reason that there's a backlog, there's a lot of demand, and they can take the money that they're saving and put it into customer experience and making these products even better than they are, you know, improving showrooms, things like that. That makes a lot of sense in this moment where people are very concerned about gas and trying to, you know, a lot of people are thinking about EVs from studies more than they were before by, you know, simply from the economics, not even necessarily from a sustainability standpoint. So I think it's a really interesting moment of rethinking your strategy and saying, could we be allocating capital in a better way?
Gotcha. So you see this as Ford not tightening their belt because they need to cut spending, but more because they have confidence in the product demand?
Yeah, because they're going to be still spending a lot. You know, from an advertising perspective, they spend quite a bit. And I think that they're still going to be spending a lot on some of their vehicles, you know, the gas guzzling variety, let's say. But specifically tied towards EVs, they're talking about reallocating this. And obviously, ad spending is going to be affected based off of demand in so many different industries, you know, auto included. And we've got some new forecasting numbers coming out, you know, on that front soon. But ultimately, yeah, I think that this is them just basically pivoting towards what's going to move the needle more rather than what's just going to cost them.
Well, congrats to car owners. It sounds like you have a lot of perks coming your way and also a lot of expenses right now. Where there are companies doing really cool and successful things, there are also companies taking approaches that may present challenges. Zach, what's an example of a company that may see challenges up ahead?
Bed Bath & Beyond is in a tough spot. Its stores used to be really cluttered. And then right before the pandemic, they began remodeling their stores, reducing their in-store SKU count, and launching some private label brands. And while that would be a pretty decent idea in normal times, these are not normal times. So what happened when the pandemic disrupted the global supply chain is they were just left with less stuff. And when something was out of stock, they didn't really have an option for people to choose another option. And so that issue is still going on, and they really have to resolve the supply chain issue. And it may mean throwing out some of this playbook that they built up earlier in the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that, like, spending on in-home items is probably taking a bit of a haircut right now.
Yeah, the category is not great right now as well.
Jeremy, do you have an example of a company that may be seeing some challenges?
Yeah, to me, I think that there was something about 3-4 weeks ago with Target, with their inventory, and we were talking about it a little bit before, but in essence, you know, they were canceling orders from suppliers, you know, particularly within home goods and clothing. And they had to slash prices quite a bit to clear out some of the inventory they had amassed. And it wasn't really that they have this issue, because other people have this issue as well. And planning has been very difficult, you know, over the last year or two. So it's hard to, you know, hold them accountable for all of that. But I think part of the issue is they just really surprised the market in that regard. Yeah. And, you know, by the size of it and how much they thought it was going to be impacting them in the future, which kind of suggests that maybe their planning is maybe a little bit more out of whack than everybody else. So remember, if everybody's not doing something all that well right now, but you're doing it in a little bit less than ideal way compared to everybody else, it's just about how you're performing in relation to the pack. And it kind of suggests that Target has some planning issues that they've got to work out.
Yeah, to me, it felt like there was this week where Target was talking about how they had all this extra stock, and it might have been the same week. It was around that time Amazon sales weren't where I think a lot of people were expecting them to be, because the e-commerce sales just couldn't keep up with the pandemic levels. And that was one of the most sort of alarming weeks I remember in this moment of economic uncertainty. Hopefully there aren't more alarming weeks to come, but I definitely got that feeling from that Target announcement.
For sure.
All right. So it sounds like we have some clear winners: Walmart Plus's gas incentive program and Ford cutting their marketing budget. We also have some companies that might need to take a look at what they're doing. We have Bed Bath & Beyond and Target. That is all that we have time for today. Thank you for joining me, Zach.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you, Jeremy.
Great to be with you.
We have a report and a number of articles on economic uncertainty available on insiderintelligence.com, so go check those out. Thank you, listeners, and to Victoria, who edits the podcast and inflates its value. Victoria, you can cut that out. I'll be back next week on another episode of Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Sky. And tune in tomorrow as Marcus brings you another episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast. Thanks.